he beat the Prussians at Ligny, but not sufficiently, and then he was hopelessly defeated by the tenacity of the British under Wellington at Waterloo in 1815. The Prussians, under Blücher, coming in on his right flank as the day wore on. Waterloo ended in a rout. It left Napoleon without support and without hope. France fell away from him again. Everyone who had joined him was eager now to attack him, and so efface that error. A provisional government in Paris ordered him to leave the country, was for giving him 24 hours to do it in. He tried to get to America, but the Rochefort, which he reached, was watched by British cruisers. France, now disillusioned and uncomfortably royalist again, was hot in pursuit of him. He went aboard a British frigate, the Bellerophon, asking to be received as a refugee, but being treated as a prisoner. He was taken to Plymouth, and, from Plymouth, straight to the lonely tropical island of St. Helena. There he remained until his death from cancer in 1821, devoting himself chiefly to the preparation of his memoirs, which were designed to exhibit the chief events of his life in a misleading and attractive light, and to minimize his worst blunders. One or two of the men with him recorded his conversations and set down their impressions of him. These works had a great vogue in France and Europe. The Holy Alliance of the monarchs of Russia, Austria, and Prussia, to which other monarchs were invited to adhere, labored under the delusion that in defeating Napoleon they had defeated the Revolution, turned back the clock of fate, and restored grand monarchy on a sanctified basis forevermore. The cardinal document of the scheme of the Holy Alliance is said to have been drawn up under the inspiration of the Baroness von Krüdener, who seems to have been a sort of spiritual director to the Russian Emperor. It opened, "In the name of the most holy and indivisible Trinity," and it bound the participating monarchs, regarding themselves towards their subjects and armies as fathers of families, and considering each other as fellow countrymen, to sustain each other, protect true religion, and urge their subjects to strengthen and exercise themselves in Christian duties. Christ, it was declared, was the real king of all Christian peoples, a very Merovingian king, one may remark, with these reigning sovereigns as his mayors of the palace. The British king had no power to sign this document. The Pope and the Sultan were not asked. The rest of the European monarchs, including the King of France, adhered. But the King of Poland didn't sign because there was no king in Poland. Alexander, in a mood of pious abstraction, was sitting on the greater part of Poland. The Holy Alliance never became an actual legal alliance of states. It gave place to a real League of Nations, the Concert of Europe, which France joined in 1818, and from which Britain withdrew in 1822. There followed a period of peace and dull oppression in Europe, over which Alexander brooded in attitudes of orthodoxy, piety, and unquenchable self-satisfaction. Many people in those hopeless days were disposed to regard even Napoleon with charity and to accept his claim that in some inexplicable way he had, in asserting himself, been asserting the Revolution and France. A cult of him as of something mystically heroic grew up after his death. Sixth. For nearly 40 years, the idea of the Holy Alliance, the Concert of Europe, which arose out of it, and the series of congresses and conferences that succeeded the concert, kept an insecure peace in war-exhausted Europe. Two main things prevented that period from being a complete social and international peace, and prepared the way for the cycle of wars between 1854 and 1871. The first of these was the tendency of the royal courts concerned towards the restoration of unfair privilege and interference with freedom of thought and writing and teaching. The second was the impossible system of boundaries drawn by the diplomatists of Vienna. The obstinate disposition of monarchy to march back towards past conditions was first and most particularly manifest in Spain. Here even the Inquisition was restored. Across the Atlantic, the Spanish colonies had followed the example of the United States and revolted against the European great power system when Napoleon set up his brother Joseph upon the Spanish throne in 1810. The Washington of South America was General Bolivar. Spain was unable to suppress this revolt. It dragged on much as the United States War of Independence had dragged on, and at last the suggestion was made by Austria, in accordance with the spirit of the Holy Alliance, that the European monarchs should assist Spain in this struggle. This was opposed by Britain in Europe, but it was the prompt action of President Monroe in the United States in 1823 which conclusively warned off this projected monarchist restoration. He announced that the United States would regard any extension of the European system in the Western Hemisphere as a hostile act. Thus arose the Monroe Doctrine, which has kept the great power system out of America for nearly 100 years, and permitted the new states of Spanish America to work out their destinies along their own lines. But if Spanish monarchism lost its colonies, it could at least, under the protection of the Concert of Europe, do what it chose in Europe. A popular insurrection in Spain was crushed by a French army in 1823 with a mandate from a European Congress, and simultaneously Austria suppressed a revolution in Naples. The moving spirit in this conspiracy of governments against peoples was the Austrian statesman Metternich. In 1824, Louis XVIII died, and was succeeded by that Count d'Artois whom we've seen hovering as an émigré on the French frontiers in 1789. He took the title of Charles X. Charles set himself to destroy the liberty of the press and universities, and to restore absolute government. The sum of 1 billion francs was voted to compensate the nobles for the chateau burnings and sequestrations of 1789. In 1830, Paris rose against this embodiment of the ancient regime and replaced him by the son of that sinister Philip, Duke of Orléans, whose execution was one of the brightest achievements of the Terror. The other continental monarchies, in face of the open approval of the revolution by Great Britain and a strong liberal ferment in Germany and Austria, didn't interfere in this affair. After all, France was still a monarchy. This young man, Louis-Philippe, 1830 to 1848, remained the constitutional king of France for 18 years. He went down in 1848, a very eventful year for Europe, of which we shall tell in the next chapter.